Chapter 76. Perhaps a larger part of the principal payable semi-annually. Please advise me and suggest alterations and emendations of the above scheme, for I need that sort of help, being ignorant of business and not able to learn a single detail of it. Such a deal would make it easy for a big firm to pour in a big cash capital and jump 50, up to enormous prosperity. Then your one-third would be a fortune, and I hope to see that day. I enclose an authority to use with Whitmore in case you have sold any royalties. But if you can't make this deal, don't make any. Wait a little and see if you can't make the deal. Do make the deal, if you possibly can. And if any presence shall be necessary in order to complete it, I will come over, though I hope it can be done without that. Get me out of business, and I will be yours forever gratefully, S50. Clemens. My idea is that I am offering my 2-3 of 50, A50, and the business for $30,000 or $40,000. Is that it? P.S. S. The new firm could retain my books and reduce them to a 10% royalty. S. 50. C. Terev. Joes. H. Twitchell, in Hartford. Villa Viviani, Settignano, Florence, June 9, 93. Dear Joe, the sea voyage set me up, and I reached here May 27 in tolerable condition, nothing left but weakness, cough all gone. Old Sir Henry Layard was here the other day, visiting our neighbor Janet Ross, daughter of Lady Duff Gordon, and since then I have been reading his account of the adventures of his youth in the Far East. In a footnote he has something to say about a sailor which I thought might interest you, viz. This same quartermaster was celebrated among the English in Mesopotamia for an entry which he made in his logbook after a perilous storm. The windy and watery elements raged. Tears and prayers was had recourse to, but was of no manner of use. So we hauled up the anchor, and got round the point. Apostrophe, there it isn't Ned Wakeman. It was before his day. With love, Mark. They closed Villa Viviani in June, and near the end of the month arrived in Munich in order that Mrs. Clemens might visit some of the German baths. The next letter is written by her, and shows her deep sympathy with Hall in his desperate struggle. There have been few more unselfish and courageous women in history than Mark Twain's wife. From Mrs. Clemens to Mr. Hall, in New York. June 27, 1893, Munich. Dear Mr. Hall, your letter to Mr. Clemens of June 16 has just reached here. As he has gone to Berlin for Claire, I am going to send you just a line in answer to it. Mr. Clemens did not realize what trouble you would be in when his letter should reach you, or he would not have sent it just then. I hope you will not worry any more than you can help. Do not let our interests weigh on you too heavily. We both know you will, as you always have, look in every way to the best interests of all. I think Mr. Clemens is right in feeling that he should get out of business, that he is not fitted for it. It worries him too much. But he need be in no haste about it, and of course, it would be the very farthest from his desire to imperil, in the slightest degree, your interests in order to save his own. I am sure that I voice his wish as well as mine when I say that he would simply like you to bear in mind the fact that he greatly desires to be released from his present anxiety and worry at a time when it shall not endanger your interest or the safety of the business. I am more sorry than I can express that this letter of Mr. Clemens should have reached you when you were struggling under such terrible pressure. I hope now that the weight is not quite so heavy. He would not have written you about the money if he had known that it was an inconvenience for you to send it. He thought the bookkeeper whose duty it is to forward it had forgotten. We can draw on Mr. Langdon for money for a few weeks until things are a little easier with you. As Mr. Clemens wrote you, we would say, oh, not send us any more money at present if we were not afraid to do so. I will say, however, do not trouble yourself if for a few weeks you are not able to send the usual amount. Mr. Clemens and I have the greatest possible desire not to increase in any way your burdens, and sincerely wish we might aid you. I trust my brother may be able, in his talk with you, to throw some helpful light on the situation. Hoping you will see a change for the better, and begin to reap the fruit of your long and hard labor. Believe me very cordially yours, Olivia 50. Clemens. Hall, naturally, did not wish to be left alone with the business. He realized that his credit would suffer, both at the bank and with the public, if his distinguished partner should retire. He wrote, therefore, proposing as an alternate that they dispose of the big subscription set that was swamping them. It was a good plan if it would work, and we find Clemens entering into it heartily. To Fred J. Hall, in New York. Munich, July 3, 93. Dear Mr. Hall, you make a suggestion which has once or twice flitted dimly through my mind heretofore, to wit, sell 50. A. L. I like that better than the other scheme, for it is no doubt feasible, whereas the other is perhaps not. The firm is in debt, but 50. A. 50. Is free, and not only free, but has large money owing to it. A proposition to sell that by itself to a big house could be made without embarrassment. We merely confess that we cannot spare capital from the rest of the business to run it on the huge scale necessary to make it an opulent success. It will be selling a good thing for somebody, and it will be getting rid of a load which we are clearly not able to carry. Whoever buys will have a noble good opening, a complete equipment, a well-organized business, a capable and experienced manager, and enterprise not experimental, but under full sail, and immediately able to pay 50% a year on every dollar the publisher shall actually invest in it, I mean in making and selling the books. I am miserably sorry to be adding bothers and torments to the oversupply which you already have in these hideous times, but I feel so troubled, myself, considering the dreary fact that we are getting deeper and deeper in debt, and the 50. A. 50. Getting to be a heavier and heavier burden all the time, that I must bestir myself and seek a way of relief. It did not occur to me that in selling out I would injure you, for that I am not going to do. But to sell 50. A. 50. Will not injure you, it will put you in better shape. Sincerely yours, S. 50. Clemens. To Fred J. Hall, in New York. July 8, 92. Dear Mr. Hall, I am sincerely glad you are going to sell 50. A. 50. I am glad you are shutting off the agents, and I hope the fatal book will be out of our hands before it will be time to put them on again. With nothing but our non-existent capital to work with, the book has no value for us, rich a prize as it will be to any competent house that gets it. I hope you are making an effort to sell before you discharge too many agents, for I suppose the agents are a valuable part of the property. We have been stopping in Munich for a while, but we shall make a break for some country resort in a few days now. Sincerely yours, S. 50. C. July 8 P.S. No, I suppose I am wrong in suggesting that you wait a moment before discharging your 50. A. 50. Agents, in fact I didn't mean that. I judge your only hope of salvation is in discharging them all at once, since it is their commissions that threaten to swamp us. It is they who have eaten up the $14,000 I left with you in such a brief time, no doubt. I feel panicky. I think the sale might be made with better advantage, however, now than later when the agents have got out of the purchaser's reach. S. 50. C. P.S. No monthly report for many months. Those who are old enough to remember the summer of 1893 may recall it as a black financial season. Banks were denying credit, businesses were forced to the wall. It was a poor time to float any costly enterprise. The Chicago company who was trying to build the machines made little progress. The book business everywhere was bad. In a brief note following the foregoing letters, Clemens wrote Hall. T is now past the middle of July, and no cablegram to say the machine is finished. We are afraid you are having miserable days and worried nights, and we sincerely wish we could relieve you, but it is all black with us, and we don't know any helpful thing to say or do. He enclosed some kind of manuscript proposition for John Brisbane Walker, of the Cosmopolitan, with the comment : it is my ingenious scheme to protect the family against the almshouse for one more year and after that, well, goodness knows. I have never felt so desperate in my life, and good reason, for I haven't got a penny to my name, and Mrs. Clemens hasn't enough laid up with Langdon to keep us 2 months. It was like Mark Twain, in the midst of all this turmoil, to project an entirely new enterprise. His busy mind was always visioning success in unusual undertakings, regardless of immediate conditions and the steps necessary to achievement. To Fred J. Hall, in New York. July 26, 1993. Dear Mr. Hall, I hope the machine will be finished this month. But it took me 4 years, and cost me $100,000 to finish the other machine after it was apparently entirely complete, and setting type like a house afire. I wonder what they call finished. After it is absolutely perfect, it can't go into a printing office until it has had a month's wear, running night and day, to get the bearing smooth, I judge. I may be able to run over about mid-October. Then if I find you relieved of 50, a 50, we will start a magazine inexpensive, and of an entirely unique sort. Arthur Stedman and his father editors of it. Arthur could do all the work, merely submitting it to his father for approval. The first number should pay and all subsequent ones 25 cents a number. Cost of first number 20,000 copies, $2,000. Give most of them away, sell the rest. Advertising and other expenses, cost unknown. Send one to all newspapers, it would get a notice favorable to. But we cannot undertake it until 50. A. L. is out of the way. With our hands free and some capital to spare, we could make it hum. Where is the Shelley article? If you have it on hand, keep it and I will presently tell you what to do with it. Don't forget to tell me. Yours sincerely, S50. See, the Shelley article mentioned in this letter was the Effence of Harriet Sheller, one of the very best of his essays. How he could have written this splendid paper at a time of such distraction passes comprehension. Furthermore, it is clear that he had revised, indeed rewritten, the long story of Pudd'nhead Wilson. To Fred J. Hall, in New York. July 30th, 93. Dear Mr. Hall, this time Pudd'nhead Wilson is a success. Even Mrs. Clemens, the most difficult of critics, confesses it, and without reserves or qualifications. Formerly she would not consent that it be published either before or after my death. I have pulled the twins apart and made two individuals of them. I have sunk them out of sight, they are mere flitting shadows now, and of no importance. Their story has disappeared from the book. Aunt Betsy Hale has vanished wholly, leaving not a trace behind. Aunt Patsy Cooper and her daughter Rowena have almost disappeared, they scarcely walk across the stage. The whole story is centered on the murder and the trial. From the first chapter the movement is straight ahead without divergence or side play to the murder and the trial. Everything that is done, or said or that happens is a preparation for those events. Therefore, three people stand up high, from beginning to end, and only three: Pudd'nhead, Tom Driscoll, and his nigger mother, Roxana. None of the others are important, or get in the way of the story or require the reader's attention. Consequently, the scenes and episodes which were the strength of the book formerly are stronger than ever now. When I began this final reconstruction, the story contained 81,500 words. Now it contains only 58,000. I have knocked out everything that delayed the march of the story, even the description of a Mississippi steamboat. There's no weather in, and no scenery. The story is stripped for flight. Now, then what is she worth? The amount of matter is but 3,000 words short of the American claimant, for which the syndicate paid $12,500. There was nothing new in that story, but the fingerprints in this one is virgin ground, absolutely fresh, and mighty curious and interesting to everybody. I don't want any more syndicating, nothing short of $20,000 anyway, and that I can't get, but won't you see how much the Cosmopolitan will stand? Do your best for me, for I do not sleep these nights, for visions of the poor house. This in spite of the hopeful tone of yours of 11th to Langdon, just received, for in me hope is very nearly expiring. Everything does look so blue, so dismally blue. By and by I shall take up their own open boat voyage again, but not now. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.